Hello and welcome to the Stooge, the politics podcast from DC Thompson Media. My name is Paul Malik, I'm the Courier's political editor, and I'm joined today from across Scotland as we look into the start of the Scottish Holyrood election 2021. Joining me from sunny Ayrshire is the Courier's political correspondent, Derek Healy, and all the way from Aberdeen, we have the Evening Express's political correspondent, Adele Merson. Good morning to you both, how are we?
Good morning.
Hello, very well, thanks.
Glad to hear it. Now, let's cut straight to the chase. We are in election season. Have we all got election fever? Are we up to the nines and high and ready to go and chase Willie Rennie around Scotland as he does one ridiculous photo shoot after the other? I know I'm excited for it, but it's going to be an election with a difference this year because we're physically not going to be able to be there, or for the most of it, I don't think we are. I think this is going to be a campaign that is going to be fronted by Zoom meetings, as it seems to be for the rest of our lives at the moment. Adele, you were in one of those particular Zoom meetings yesterday with Douglas Ross. Can you tell us a bit about what happened and how exciting it was to be on the end of a camera microphone with him?
Yes, it was a bit of a different election campaign this year, rather than, despite the event actually being in Aberdeen, the Conservative manifesto launch, I wasn't able to go and had to sort of tune in via the a virtual press huddle. So it's definitely different from usual campaigns. I mean, even the questioning at times, you know, somebody asked him, why is your haircut's really neat? Like, are you doing that yourself? And it was at that moment I was like, no, this is just a really strange year.
Well, a journalist asked that.
Yeah.
Because I know he's been doing a lot of Facebook free-for-alls, and he's been caught out a couple of times by people with false names. We'll not say any of them because it's too rude for our listenership.
Yeah, there's been some interesting questions, and Douglas Ross has been doing these kind of getting the public to send in their questions and answer them, which, as you can imagine, if you just take a cursory look at any kind of Facebook thread, you get some interesting contributions.
So I was a journalist asked why his hair was so neat. Wow. Well, fair enough. Did he explain why his hair was neat?
He's been cutting it himself. Wow. Apparently. So he said, you know, if all else fails, judging by that question, I have a potential career as a hairdresser. So,
well, he's still not guaranteed to be an MSP, is he? He does have a job. Oh, he already got two jobs. I think the SNP would jump on that if he was to have a fifth job as well, wouldn't they?
Yeah, we did touch on the dual mandate because he said he's not going to stand down from his... he's currently the Murray MP. He's not going to stand down from that, and has had some criticism from the SNP, and he was asked about that yesterday and just kind of said, you know, well, there is many of the other parties have done this already. Famously, Alex Salmond was somebody that had done this. So I think he was suggesting that it's quite hypocritical to be having a go at him over it. And he did say he will be donating his MSP salary to a charity.
If it's okay for Alex Salmond, it's okay for me is kind of an odd campaign slogan to launch on. Derek, if you're not out and about during this election campaign, how are you going to be following the highs and lows? Are you going to be relying a lot more on social media and a lot more on what the photographers are able to snap? And do you think that's going to hinder the way we're able to report?
Well, I think DC Thompson is going to hopefully have quite a lot of interesting coverage for both me and others to follow. Just a little plug for some stuff we've got coming up.
Synergy, the board are clapping their hands at that. Carry on, Derek, sorry.
Definitely felt yesterday, you know, with Willie Rennie's campaign launch with his big chair, and with the poll we had as well coming out, it definitely still felt like the start of a campaign in the morning. But yeah, as Adele says, it suddenly felt quite strange when a lot of these launches were online, and not actually seeing the politicians launching these things and being a little bit removed. It's a strange feeling. I covered the Anna Sarwar Scottish Labour launch, and he touched a little bit on the sort of double jobbing element of Douglas Ross as well. But really, he was kind of keen to. He's going to be putting his name on the ballot paper under the slogan Anna Sarwar Labour's National Recovery Plan. And I think that's the first time a Scottish Labour leader has ever used their name in that way. We've seen in the past Nicola Sturgeon and Ruth Davidson have put their names on the ballot paper. And in his mind, this is really to kind of put that message front and centre to voters. And it's also seen as a sort of, well, in his mind, he's hoping it's going to be seen by voters as something showing a little bit of confidence, I think, as well. So he was very much, during that launch, taking aim at both the SNP and the Conservatives. And I think really kind of trying to position Labour as the alternative to those two parties, as a sort of opposition in waiting, in effect. So despite it feeling quite different in the way things were set up, we saw a lot of the same kind of politics you'd expect on the first day of an election campaign.
Because it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I know having spoken to Willie Rennie and the Lib Dems, is a lot of their campaign is going to be focused on the sort of character that Willie sometimes portrays in the media. And you only have to look at past election campaigns where you've seen him doing all sorts of weird and wonderful things at photo operations. And, you know, you touched on it there, Derek, about the fact that the last election in 2016 definitely seemed to be between a battle between the personalities of Ruth Davidson and Nicola Sturgeon. Mm-hmm. Adele, do you think that's going to continue this time then? Do you think it's going to be mainly about the vote for the leader, or do you think people are going to actually take note of this, the more nitty-gritty, the local issues and the issues that really should be sort of jumping up and saying, you know, this is what needs to change or this is what they need to do, and they need some proper policy behind them?
No, I probably would think that it's going to be personally more based around the personalities involved. I think I've touched about this maybe a week or two ago, but, you know, currently Nicola Sturgeon is so front and centre of so many people's, you know, what they see every day. I mean, the daily briefings have taken a bit of a break, but before that she was on television every single day. And so I think that she's going to be much more firmly in the public consciousness than, you know, unlike, as you say, other years where Ruth Davidson was also a well-known figure and liked by a particular type of voter. This year, I think Douglas Ross has more of a challenge in that sense, in terms of, I guess, people just knowing all about him and what he represents. And whereas Ruth Davidson was very firmly sort of associated with that Better Together brand. I mean, it was interesting yesterday because Douglas Ross was his kind of tagline. He was wanting to rediscover the Better Together spirit this year. And it felt like, you know, pivoting again back to that, you know, there wasn't a lot of actual policies being mentioned. It was mainly all, we're against a second independence referendum, and that's what you get if you vote for us, kind of thing. But I think, you know, as Derek touched upon there, this time round, Anna Sarwar has, you know, many times said, no, I refuse to work with them. So I think there's not that same kind of, yeah, there's no sense that the pro-union kind of parties are working together on that. And so I think this whole idea of getting that better together spirit is maybe not going to, it's not really going to take off.
Now, listeners would have, of course, been picking up their PNGs and couriers this week or visiting our wonderful websites, and they'll have noticed that we have had some exclusive polling done by Servation. Now, of course, when it comes to Scottish politics, the one question everyone wants to know is, how is Scottish independence doing? Do the people want it? Do the people not want it? Do people want to stay part of the UK? And we have all of the answers on our website. We're going to talk a little bit about them because the polling, although not surprising in itself, did tell us quite a lot about what the election probably will focus on. So we'll start with the big one first. Scottish independence, should Scotland be an independent country? And we asked a very large sample size of people, more than 2,000 people took part in this survey, which is larger than normal. And 51% of the respondents said no. They believed that Scotland should not be an independent country and should remain part of the Union. Yet, when we asked a second question, if Scotland could be guaranteed a membership of the European Union as an independent country, 53% of voters said that they think Scotland should be an independent country. So it sways on EU and Brexit again. Derek, you've had we've had a look through with me with some of these numbers as well. One of the other interesting things is just how popular the SNP are, and they are, according to these figures, on course for an overall majority at Holyrood, which would mean that they could get the independence bill put through Parliament with relative ease, couldn't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, that certainly looks to be the case at the moment. I think there's a lot of kind of interesting factors to this still at play. Certainly there's been discussions of what would happen if we have an overall SNP majority, if we have a strong pro-independence majority, what that would mean for the sort of independence campaign, what that would mean for holding a second referendum. As you said, we know from the polling that the SNP are still on course for a majority. But I think there's also a hint in there that the battle for second place is really kind of coming down to the wire between Labour and the Conservatives. It's interesting, I looked at the Conservative Party conference for the Stushy column last week, and Boris Johnson, in his speech, didn't mention Nicola Sturgeon once, but did name-check two Labour leaders in Jeremy Corbyn and Sir Keir Starmer. So I wondered if that was maybe a hint that they could be looking at where their potential votes could be coming from at this election, and maybe thinking that they're more likely to win over previous Labour voters than they are talking round former SNP ones. Anna Sarwar as well, was really interesting during the vote of no confidence debate in Nicola Sturgeon. Really, his speech was almost like a sort of pitch to voters to position his party as a sort of opposition. And it was quite a different tone to what we've seen in the past, to sort of abstain from that vote and then take issue with both the SNP and the Tories. So again, maybe they're looking at the polls pointing towards that pro-independence majority, but thinking overtaking the Conservatives into second place might be a realistic target. That was definitely the message, the kind of thing they were looking to push during that campaign launch on Thursday. So I think that's going to be a very interesting dynamic as this election campaign goes on. The Tories are obviously going to try and push themselves out there as being the Save the Union party, and clearly the only ones who will really stand against Scottish independence. They used that tactic in the past. I think we need to see how well that cuts through with voters in 2021 when there's all these other issues, there's COVID, Brexit, all these other things at play, how much that actually cuts through.
I mean, Adele, do you think the Scottish Tories, who under Ruth Davidson in 2016 picked up a lot of sort of stray Labour and Liberal votes by being the party of the union, by being the party that said we are the strongest for the UK, do you think they'll be able to repeat that this time round? Or do you think Westminster really has done a bit of a number on them?
I think they have got a much tougher task this year. As Derek says, it's just there's so many more factors at play that, you'll have some voters that will look at how the UK government has dealt with coronavirus, and that will maybe cloud their view entirely and make them feel they're unable to, even if they're pro-union, make them feel they're unable to vote for, the Conservatives. I also think that, as you said before, with Brexit, that the Tories are still, I think Professor John Curtis said this, that, they're too tied to that Leave vote, and they have come out so strongly anti-Sturgeon that, yeah, it's quite a tactic, I guess. I think you might go on to this, but our polling also showed sort of popularity figures as well, and that more than half of people thought favourably of Nicola Sturgeon. So I think that does show, the Conservatives have clearly been gunning for her to be removed with a vote of no confidence because she's a big reason for that is because she is so popular with the electorate, I guess. So yeah, I definitely think it's going to be a much tougher task this year. I mean, I did ask Douglas Ross about the fact that our polling showed that the Conservatives were coming in sort of closely behind Labour, and he said, the journalists said the same in 2016 Holyrood election, which almost every poll showed us behind, and then we didn't. But despite that, I do think it's going to be a much tougher task.
I think it was interesting as well to see John Curtis commenting on how a sort of enthusiasm for Nicola Sturgeon coming out of the pandemic and the way that's been handled, and even the SNP more widely, doesn't necessarily translate into enthusiasm for independence. And I think that's probably going to be quite a tough question to answer for the SNP. You know, obviously the ultimate goal is independence. How do you make that translate? And I think that'll be interesting as well when we see how this election campaign carries on.
Because under Nicola Sturgeon, the party has drifted to the left. You could say that the SNP on sort of domestic issues are similar or in a similar vein as to what Scottish Labour should be. You know, with a lot of the policies that they've brought forward, Scottish Labour would of course say that they are of course not representative of that, and that's for them to say, not for me. But is this one election where actually fighting for policy on a domestic front for Labour could suit them a bit better, Derek? You know, not getting sort of bogged down in the constitutional quagmire, which seems to have stymied the country over the last couple of years. And if they were to be seen to be pushing for things that devolution can solve and should be solving, do you think that could work out well for them in the polls? Or are we forever to be entwined in yes or no?
It's a difficult one to say. I mean, that certainly seems to be what the approach is going to be at this election. I think you saw the kind of first signs of that even at the final First Minister's questions before Parliament kind of packed up ahead of the election. The topics that were getting raised, I mean, it was the day after the vote of no confidence. We'd had the reports come out in regards to whether or not Nicola Sturgeon had breached the code of conduct, whether she misled Parliament. All that stuff had come out. And the focus seemed to go back quite strongly to education, talking about the attainment gap, and to health as well. So these are kind of good old-fashioned topics that are discussed in a devolved parliament. So it does seem as if some of the focus shifted back there. We've seen kind of very early on in this campaign talk of the independence question, but I know that, for example, the Lib Dems, I mean, they've launched their campaign with a pledge to raise starting salaries for teachers, increase teacher numbers, guarantee jobs for teachers. You know, so that's education. I know that in the Labour launch as well, they were quite keen to say that we need to move away from this question and start looking at other issues as well. So I think that's definitely going to be one of the approaches in this campaign. Whether it's successful, I think it's going to be a really difficult one to answer. I think we need to wait and see what actually happens.
And yeah, Adele touched upon that earlier. The polling did show that there was a favourability of more than 50% for Nicola Sturgeon, which was, you know, double any other leader in Scotland, and the leader of the opposition in Westminster and Boris Johnson as well. Now, I think they were going for hell for leather, I think is one way you could say, Derek, earlier this week when the Scottish Tories proposed yet another vote of no confidence in a minister, this time the First Minister. And yet again, the minister survives, but quite comprehensively this time. You followed that, and you can talk us through briefly what happened and what are going to be the outcomes of this sort of yet again failed vote of no confidence that's been brought against Nicola Sturgeon.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some suggestion, I think, that this has maybe been a bit of a miscalculation on the part of the Conservatives in pushing on with this. So the call for a vote of no confidence before we'd seen the reports, before we knew whether it was going to be found that Nicola Sturgeon had misled Parliament and whether she'd breached the code of conduct. We subsequently found out that the Hamilton report said that she had not breached the code of conduct on any of the issues raised. But the inquiry into how the Scottish Government handled harassment complaints, which is a cross-party group, they concluded that she had misled Parliament. So Nicola Sturgeon kind of easily survived this vote of no confidence, and I think some people have actually even taken issue with the use of the word survive, because it was, you know, a really, really strong vote of confidence in Nicola Sturgeon. It's only the sixth such vote in the history of devolution, and it's the first ever involving a First Minister. She survived because we knew she was going to survive beforehand, because the Greens had already said they're going to back her after the Hamilton report was published. But you also had Labour and the Lib Dems abstain from voting, which is why it was such a strong result. And it really kind of cut the Conservatives adrift from the rest of the opposition parties, and indeed the rest of the parties at Holyrood. I think one of the interesting things during the debate was that MSPs kind of repeatedly spoke of the need for the next parliament, the next group of MSPs coming in after May's election, to do better than what they've done here. I mean, I think the inquiry has really raised, probably not in the way that they intended, fresh questions about the parliament's ability to hold ministers and officials to account. John Swinney, who is at times kind of quite angry, described how some of the scenes that have played out, and specifically kind of tweets from opposition MSPs branding Nicola Sturgeon a liar before these reports were published, were of the lowest standard he had seen during his entire political career. You also had the leaks, including, you know, details of private evidence sessions involving two of the complainers against Alex Salmond, and sections of the report being made available before it's even finalised. We know the women involved have already confirmed they're going to be making a formal complaint to Parliament over the leaks. And I think, again, it was John Swinney and Scottish Greens co-leader Patrick Harvey said the people responsible for these leaks shouldn't be allowed to stand again. They're not fit for Parliament. And also in the report, we know that there's all sorts of questions about some of the stuff that was actually going on behind the scenes as well. Patrick Harvey talked about how, you know, no one has come forward to complain in the past 3 years after this has all come to light. It's hard to remember any time where the Parliament has been brought to close on such a low note as it was during that debate. And I think there's probably going to be kind of serious questions still needing to be addressed when the new batch of MSPs does come in, because, you know, it's important that officials are able to be held to account, and I don't think those questions have been answered yet.
Derek touched upon that briefly there, where he said that Parliament does seem to have ended or gone into the election campaign on a bit of a low note, with quite a lot of unanswered questions and quite a lot of angry sentiment. What hope, if any, do you have of this campaign being a nice clean fight and showing really the best of Scottish democracy? Or should we all be going into it with our helmets on?
Yeah, I mean, our colleague Callum had written a nice piece, to be honest, on some of the big figures that are standing down this year. And I myself did a series on the 1999 Club. And, you know, there is cause to be positive as well. There's the last few days, I don't think, did show the Parliament in the best light. And certainly I don't think this campaign is going to suddenly become, you know, really civil and not heated and fiery. But I'd like to hope that, you know, you see some of the people that are seeking election, and all, you know, there's a lot of the kind of old guard now leaving, and there is, with that does always come optimism that, you know, that the Parliament will become more representative, that you'll get some new faces, and maybe some of that toxicity will go. But I think that's probably being too optimistic, to be honest.
It's just like my teachers used to always say, room for improvement. Now, we'd usually do our Stoosh of the Week round about now, but I think we'll save it and we'll do a doubler next week, because we're on the campaign trail and there are bound to be some absolute belters. So without further ado, I am Paul Malik. Thank you, Derek Keeley and Adele Merson, for joining us on the Stooshy Accept No Imitations. We'll join you next week at the same time on your same podcast provider. Goodbye.
The Stooshy is the politics podcast from DC Thompson Media, bringing together political journalists and commentators from all over the country so that you are better briefed. Teams at The Courier, The Press and Journal, The Evening Telegraph and The Evening Express work hard every day, online and in print, to bring you careful reporting and analysis to help you understand the implications of what happens in Holyrood, Westminster and beyond. Subscribe to The Stooshy today, recommend us to friends and family, rate and review it if you have a moment, and let us know what you think of what we cover and how we cover it on Twitter and Facebook. We're Stooshy Scott on both. Be better briefed with The Stooshy from DC Thompson Media.